Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to today's USPP conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today, Thursday, 23rd of August, 2018. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Martin Schütterbeher. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and welcome everyone on this call for the half-year results 2018. As many of you are accustomed to, with me here today is Hans Kooijmans, our CFO, and from the treasury side, we've got Frank and Karl-Heinz joining as well. As already introduced, the format is very similar to what we've done in previous calls. Initially, Hans will run through the numbers, giving some details on what we've presented last week also to the equity market, followed by a Q&A. If there are any other questions subsequently, feel free to reach out. We will also, after the call, be circulating the details for the playback readout. With that, Hans, I'd like to hand over to you.
Yes. Thank you, Martin. Welcome, everybody. Appreciate you calling in and listen to us. First half of 2018. The first half year with revenues that were up versus the first half of last year with around 6%. Corrected for currency and for new consolidations also, it is around 6%. Where that is coming from, we'll be discussing in a minute when we go through the segments. Notwithstanding revenues having gone up, in EBITDA terms, we have come down versus the first half of last year. This is mainly a result of the developments in the offshore energy division, and then more particular in the service part of that division. That is not coming unexpectedly. As also you will know from previous calls we have had, we have also earlier expressed our expectations in that respect. You should probably remember, we are relatively late cyclical, which means that even up till last year, we have been able to profit from all the pricing out of better times from the oil and gas activities. We have now in 2019 landed really in the current market situation in oil and gas in offshore, and that's been the main reason why the EBITDA has come down. That's also the main reason why we have taken this first half extraordinary charges of almost 400 million euros. The exact details of that I will discuss a little bit later in my introduction. As I said, that is also mainly related to the developments in offshore. That being said, for the vast part, the 95% of that amount is non-cash. It's non-cash impairment charges, and certainly for less than 20 million of that, it is future cash out expenses. Corrected for these charges, the net operating profit for the first half of the year has been 35 million versus 75 million last year. Positive note, order book has increased versus the beginning of this year from 3.5 billion to 3.9 billion. That's mainly in the dredging division. Notwithstanding the net loss for the first half of the year as a result of these extraordinary charges, as I said, these are mainly non-cash charges. Our solvency is still very sound, very good at 56% versus almost 63% at the beginning of the year. Slide four won't discuss because that's basically, in somewhat more detail, the overall numbers. I think probably more interesting is slide 5 with respect to the our financing ratios in comparison to the governance. As I said, balance sheet is still very very strong. Net debt over EBITDA over the first half of this year was 0.9, and our interest cover ratio is was 28. I think from that respect, none of you should have any concerns, not even with the loss, as I just mentioned. We are in a pretty good position from a balance sheet perspective. Slide 6, it's the allocation of the split up of the revenue by region. Nothing particular there to mention, relatively stable, around 20% as usual of our revenues we do generate in the Netherlands, around 40% of it in the rest of Europe. So in total, just over half of our revenues, also the first half of the year, coming out of Europe, and the rest of the world, and no major deviations from the split of the first half of last year. Slide 7, as I mentioned, the order book has increased. Here you see the split up over the three divisions, and that's mainly dredging and energy offshore. She probably remembers salvage. It's that is not a business that runs on really substantial longer term contracts. Dredging the revenue has gone up mainly due to one project here in the Netherlands near Amsterdam, but more importantly, two large contracts in Singapore, one related to the megaport development, the new megaport in Singapore, and the other one, very prestigious job we're very happy with. It's the construction of a well, I'm looking at Matthijs, whether the English term
polder.
Polder.
It's a polder.
Okay,
polder.
It's in English. It's also a polder. Both very sizable jobs. That being said, execution period is slightly longer than usual. So the order portfolio is just over 3 billion, but with a longer execution duration, let's say, than under normal circumstances we would have. Offshore energy, that's a reflection of the current market situation in oil and gas. With the with the execution of, as I just mentioned, the older projects, order book now has come down to just under 900 million. We have acquired new work in the first half of the year, but no real large contracts there. Quite a number of smaller contracts. One very interesting contract, or two contracts, I should say, offshore float over installation and a logistical management contract we have just received at the beginning of the third quarter, but was not included in the order book. Then I'll continue with slide 9, where you see the split up of the revenue and the operating result over the three divisions, and the EBIT over the non-allocated income and expenses and the head office costs. Dredging an increase in revenue, stable EBIT with respect to last year. Revenue in offshore energy has come down, and even if we correct that for the new acquisition, an acquisition we did last year, the company Guardline in the UK service company that we discussed in the previous call, that generated around 30 million of revenue. You'll see that revenue of the existing business has come down somewhat more, but more importantly, whereas the results in dredging were stable versus the first half of last year, here you see that in offshore energy we have seen a quite a severe reduction in result, and We've even ended up the first half of the year in a loss of 7 million. The background of that I will be discussing in a minute when we discuss the offshore energy division in somewhat more detail. Towage and salvage, the result has come down slightly versus the first half of last year, mainly as a result of some lower results in some of our harbor towage joint ventures, and a large negative number for the non-allocated income and expenses. Nothing really particular there. Last year we had some non-recurring income items there, as for instance a book value on a sale of real estate. Whereas this year we had some non-recurring expenditure items. That being said, I'll continue on to the dredging division on slide 10. As I already mentioned, revenues have gone up. The utilization, which you'll find on the next slide, slide 11, the utilization of our main category of equipment, the hoppers, has increased versus last year, and certainly versus the first half of last year, and versus the first half of 2016, so a upward trend. Good utilization, I think also certainly good with respect to the rest of the industry. The industry in total, so our dear competitors here in the Netherlands and in Belgium, I think overall we're probably close to 30 weeks, but we are substantially higher than that on 37 weeks. Some large contracts under execution. The hoppers, certainly with respect to the first half of last year, has come down. As you may remember, mid of last year, we have taken into operation our mega cutter, the Helios. That has started to work on a project in Oman. It has delivered a good performance on the project in Oman in the first quarter of this year, but as part of the staging of the project, the cutter has been unemployed for the second quarter. Nothing to worry about there. That was as planned. As of next month, the vessel will restart doing work. In the meantime, we've received some additional scope for the Helios, and she will, for the remainder of this year and into next year, will be employed on the Duqm job in Oman. In line with an increased revenue, with this these utilization numbers of the equipment, the EBITDA has gone up from 112 last year, the first half, to 122. EBIT number, though, has been flat, and the main reason for that is that A, we have the added depreciation as a result of the Helios that has become part of the fleet. That's accounts for about half of that difference, and the other half is the decrease, as you can see on slide 10, in the net result of an associate we have, where last year we had a non-recurring profit in one of these joint ventures. So all in all, relatively stable with, as I said, higher EBITDA and good utilization. Also, I think noteworthy to add that our Dutch inland infra activities have performed stably, positive contribution to our results, in line with previous years, with EBIT margins of around 3%. That with respect to dredging. Then I'll continue on slide 12, the offshore energy division. As I mentioned, that's where we've seen the real decline in the first half of the year, as you see here, less so in revenue numbers, more so in EBITDA numbers. That is primarily coming from the services part of the division. Contracting has been relatively stable in revenue terms as well as in EBITDA terms. We have quite some good projects under execution. Very prominent contract there is the Nord Stream 2 project that you may be aware of. It's the pipeline, somewhat controversial project, but it is under execution right now. It's the extension of the new Nord Stream 2. Huh? A couple of years ago, we had the construction of the Nord Stream 1 pipeline. Now we are involved in various activities around the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Most important of that is the rock protection works. We did a first campaign of rock protection in the first half of the year. We've also been working on the Turk Stream pipeline, the landing of the Turk Stream pipeline in Turkey, under execution, developing well. No effects of the current turbulence in Turkey doesn't affect our project at all. We've also had the good volume in cable laying works. So overall, considering the circumstances and the market, satisfied with the first half of the year in contracting. That's different in services. That's where we've seen the real decline in the results. Two factors that are playing a role. One, the minor factor, the minor one of those two is our subsea activities. As you may remember from previous calls, we have increased our fleet in the diving support activities. Two diving support vessels. We purchased two, one which we had under charter, so that hasn't really changed our capacity there. But we have also purchased a larger one, the ex-Harkent vessel, at the end of last year, and taken another ex-Harkent vessel on a three years charter. So that's a substantial increase in capacity. But we believe transactions that we have done at the bottom of the market that will help us. Increase our position in the diving support business going forward. Those two vessels have been taken into operation in the second quarter, and as you may understand and appreciate, it takes some effort, certainly in a depressed market, to get satisfactory occupation for these vessels. So the costs of bringing these vessels into operation, starting up operations with these vessels, have put some downward pressure on the result, but as mentioned, for us, a important strategic step. Larger and more problematic has been the developments in the other part of the services sector, and then in particular in heavy marine transport, the previous Dockwise. And as we've mentioned before, looking at Dockwise and the around 20 vessels of Dockwise, part of that, the higher end of the fleet, is primarily working for oil and gas. It's higher value activities, newer vessels. That part of the fleet has performed under the circumstances quite well. We've had satisfactory utilization there. Some of the vessels even had full utilization for the first half of the year, be it not at the prices. As I mentioned before, we've run up the order portfolio that was built up in the heydays of the oil and gas market. As I mentioned before, this is a real late cyclical business. So therefore, projects at the higher prices have been run off mostly last year. Now we employ these vessels at current pricing levels, partly in the spot market, so lower levels than last year, but with still positive EBIT numbers and positive EBITDA numbers, which is different from the for the lower half of the fleet of Dockwise, where we have the older vessels that are more commodity-type vessels, so working in the lower end of the market, were already, we mentioned it before, last year, in the spot markets, we were finding ourselves in negative EBIT territory, but still positive cash, positive EBITDA, with the increased capacity in that market, in particular coming from the far east, and the demand at the current levels. We've seen that we have now moved in the first half of this year in very substantial negative EBIT numbers, and even in a situation where now we find ourselves on projects at the current price levels being cash negative, which has been the point for us to decide that, considering what we think the prospect in this part of the market, and as I mentioned, we see structural overcapacity there, so we don't think this situation is going to reverse anytime soon, and considering the fact that these are relatively old vessels, we have taken the decision to withdraw from that part of the market and consequently put 11 of the vessels, so it's half of the fleet of Dockwise, out of operation. We have already five of these vessels in cold layup, so we will not take those vessels back into operation again. We intend to scrap those vessels. The other ones that are still working on jobs that we have in portfolio now or that are committed, three of those vessels even into next year, will run off those commitments, then also take these vessels out of operation with the intention to scrap them. This has been an important factor in, as I mentioned before, the extraordinary charges we had the first half of the year that I will discuss in somewhat more detail in a minute or so. Maybe good to mention. I already mentioned it. Gardline, the survey company that we acquired in the UK, primarily active on the North Sea. This time last year, so we've had the first 12 months with the company. We've seen a very satisfactory first half of the year with substantially higher utilization than we had budgeted for this year. Substantially better prices than last year in the market. I think because we get the same kind of remarks from Fugro, as you may know, is the largest party in the North Sea in this area. I think some first signs of some recovery in the offshore market. And therefore, we have done substantially better than we anticipated at the time of the acquisition last year. So, very careful conclusion that we may have done this transaction really at the bottom of the market. That's what I wanted to say with respect to offshore energy. Then on to towage and salvage. And then to start with salvage. Revenue up with respect to the first half of last year. First half of last year, we had a very slow half year. We had a much busier second half of the year. Also this year, we started somewhat slowly, but have become very busy in the course of the spring. Very prominent job there. You may have read or heard about it. It was the mega container vessel of Maersk, the Maersk Honam, that got on fire in the Middle East. We were involved in that. We're still involved in that. We have additional work acquired with respect to cleaning up the vessel. The vessel was saved. It's not a total loss, but very severe damage that we're involved in. That plus some other jobs made it a pretty busy first half of the year. And it also has resulted in a higher result versus the first half of last year. Towage is somewhat different, as I already mentioned at the beginning. Certainly within some of our joint venture, we feel, notwithstanding the fact that volumes in these businesses, in most of these joint ventures, are relatively stable, we have seen increased competition in a few of these joint ventures, with experiencing some further price pressure, in particular from the container sector, as you may have seen. Things are not really great in the container shipping sector, putting therefore additional pressure on pricing in ports, and that in combination with increased capacity and competition in some of the ports is putting the results of some of these joint ventures under pressure. That being said, they're all in positive territory, so it's less profit. We don't have any loss-making joint ventures there, but it has been a reason for us, these developments, to critically look at our valuation of some of these joint ventures, and as a result of that critical evaluation, also took some impairment charges there. Then on to slide 15, holding and elimination. Slide 14, just shortly, but I won't be discussing them, as we also include them for the financial analysts and our shareholders. We provide the 100% numbers for all the joint ventures that we are involved in the towage sector. And since we have an interest in 50% of all of the joint ventures, it also gives a reflection of, you can just multiply these numbers with 0.5, and then you see the underlying revenues, the EBITDAs, the order book, and the net debt of the joint ventures that we participate in. Slide 15, holding and eliminations. Result there has come down versus the first half of last year. Part of that is the overhead costs of the headquarter operations that are not part of the division organizations. That is a relatively stable, just over 30 million on an annual basis. But as I mentioned before, sometimes we have non-recurring income there that we don't allocate to the division. Sometimes we have non-recurring recurring expenses. Last year we had the income. This year we had some expenses and no income, therefore this difference, but no structural developments over there and nothing to be concerned about. Then slide 16, I already mentioned it a few times, the extraordinary charges. As I mentioned, we are going to take a substantial number of vessels of Dockwise out of operation. We also gave a critical look to some other vessels at the lower end of the market activities we have over there. On that basis, we took an impairment charge of 137 million. The vast bulk of that is these 11 vessels that I mentioned of Dockwise. Since, as I also mentioned, we still have commitments on some of these vessels. And obviously, we have crews with respect to these vessels. We have people in overhead departments working with respect to these vessels in order to cover reorganization costs. Will not be any major reorganization, by the way, but to cover reorganization costs and to provide for potential cash outs on the contractual commitments we still have on these vessels. We took 17 million in wind-down provisions. We also, considering these developments in the offshore energy division, brought forward the usual annual goodwill impairment test. As you know, we always have to perform that as part of the year-end closing. Based on what we've seen in the first half of the year, we brought that forward to the first half of the year. Made an evaluation and decided that the remaining goodwill we have on the balance sheet for offshore energy, we wrote that down very clearly, non-cash. It's not a reflection that we longer term look structurally different towards offshore. We just used this opportunity to, and considering the circumstances that I just mentioned, to clean our balance sheet in that respect and write down the remaining portion of goodwill. And then finally, as I already mentioned, the developments in the first half of the year in certain of the ports has also brought us to critically evaluate the devaluations, the book value of our joint ventures there, and in particular the goodwill that is embedded in these book value. Goodwill that was to a large extent created by the creation of these joint ventures under IFRS rules in the past, that has resulted in, as we always discussed them at the time, into accounting profits as the result of creation of joint ventures. We have written down these now in the first half of the year. That's, I think, as far as the results are concerned. Slide 18, the balance sheet, nothing particularly noteworthy there, except for, of course, the reflection of the extraordinary charges that I just mentioned, that you see reflected in the tangible fixed assets, obviously in the goodwill and the valuation of the joint ventures. That are the main reasons for the reduction in those numbers versus the beginning of the year. Net working capital has gone up somewhat, but I'll come back on that in a minute when I'll discuss the cash flow. And as a result, mainly of the development in working capital, net debt increased the first six months from 120 net debt at the beginning of this year to almost 240 million. At the end of the first half of the year. Slide 19, notwithstanding the reduction in the results and the substantial loss over the first half of the year, still a solid almost 140 million cash flow, obviously quite a steep reduction versus last year's, but in line with the developments, as I mentioned, primarily in the offshore energy division. Net capital expenditure on slide 20, well within that cash flow. Gross capex 91 million. That concerns, amongst others, the construction of the sister vessel of the Helios, the second mega cutter. Some money there involved is the completion of our, as you see it on the picture here, on the photograph, the heavy lifting vessel, the Boka Lift 1, that we completed and took into operation the beginning of this year. She's working on a wind installation project right now. The usual dry docking costs. But no major other investments than the ones that I just mentioned. Then slide 21, the cash flow. Most of the issues I think I've mentioned. Working capital. There we have seen a cash outflow in the first half of the year. You may remember last year, also for the full year, that was quite a substantial cash out, and I explained it at that time. That was really, let's say, a reflection of the fact that we have concluded some large contract with advantageous payment terms that we had in portfolio and under execution in the last couple of years. But as I mentioned it also at that time, I think most of that had been done by the end of last year. The cash outflow for the first half of this year is more the typical seasonal patterns. We have quite a number of activities, primarily here in the northwestern part of Europe. Think of our activities here in the Netherlands, in the Nordics, in Germany, in the UK. the diving activities on the North Sea, the cable laying activities in the North Sea, in the Baltic Sea. All of those are activities that are relatively slow in the first quarter, that projects start up the, at the end of the winter into the spring. That's why in, I would say, 9 out of 10 years, we have negative cash outflows in the first half of the year that are then reversed in the second half of the year when we're going into the winter. Clients pay their monies and we're back to where we started. That's the main factor driving this this cash outflow. As the usual, timing issues on larger projects. For instance, we had two larger projects where we received some receivables just after the end of the first half year instead of just before the end of the first half year. So nothing concerning, really concerning there. For the remainder, I discussed the CAPEX. We had, with respect to the dividends of 2017, a choice dividends for shareholders, pretty consistent with the last, I don't know how many years, around three quarters of our shareholders elected to receive dividends in stock. A quarter of the shareholders elected dividend in cash, that being 36 million cash outflow the first half of the year. And in the first half of this year, we concluded the buyback program of the 2016 dividend. 70 million was involved in that. And with that, the buyback program has been completed. With respect to the dividend 2017, we have no buyback program running, nor currently intend any buyback of stock. Slide 22, basically a repetition of what I already said, the net debt EBITDA ratio and interest cover ratios, all very fine. And just for your information, the maturity schedule, but you may be familiar with that from previous calls, with respect to our RCF facility expiring in 2021 and your USPP expiring in 2023. Now, how do we look upon the remainder of the year? For the remainder of the year, we see a market picture which is basically unchanged, stable compared to the first half of the year, meaning that with respect to the dredging and inland infra division, stable volumes, stable margins, no particular developments there. Offshore energy, as I already mentioned, we have some good projects in portfolio in the contracting part of that division. Services, we expect the positive effect from the termination of the low-end transport activities. As a result of the impairment charges there, and as a result of the determination of the activities there, we do expect on an annual basis, so that we will see at the full effect in 2019, but already we will see an effect of that in the second half of this year. But on an annual basis, we expect EBIT to improve with around 25 million as a result of that decision to withdraw from that part of the of our activities. So which we expect a stable situation at the current levels. And salvage, I already mentioned, we have some further work with respect to the Maersk Honam. Some other projects in the meantime, good volume in the emergency response activities. So we have a positive outlook there for the remainder of the year, and that all taken together, and in particular the improvement of the results we expect in services as a result of the measures we have taken there. We expect a sharp increase of the profits in the second half compared to the first half. However, that result is also expected to be lower than the second half of 2017. In summary, that means somewhere between the 35 of the first half of the year and the 75 of the second half of last year. And then finally, CapEx for the full year, we expect at a level of 250 million. But we have included a substantial amount in debt for hopefully some opportunities we will have in the second half of the year to acquire some further assets. I already mentioned the two diving support vessels that we acquired last year. As I mentioned, we think we are probably at the trough in the market in offshore energy, and we're hopeful that we're able to add a few more second-hand good quality assets at the current price levels there. If that happens, we expect the level to be at around 250 million. Otherwise, it could even be substantially lower than that for the rest of the year. That concludes my remarks by way of introduction, and I hand over to Martijn.
Thank you very much, Hans. Thanks for joining us through the 2018 first half year numbers. Operator, if you could then please take over and open the lines for any questions which investors may have for us here.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A queue. This will only take a few moments. If you wish to cancel your request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from the line of Tolgar Sirvansi. Please ask your question.
Yeah, hi, this is Toby Addison. First off, thanks a lot for the presentation today. We always find it pretty useful. I just had a quick question on the offshore energy division. So it seems like the services area of the division that's been hit particularly badly recently, and the contracting side has been slightly more stable. Do you have any idea what the rough split in revenue will be after these 11 vessels are taken offline between the contracting and servicing side of the division?
Yeah, what we've indicated last year was roughly 50-50 the split. Bear in mind that the revenue contribution from the vessels which we're going to be scrapping and decommissioning is limited. First of all, half of the vessels were lying idle anyway in the first half of the year. You have to think of a couple of tens of millions euros revenue which we are going to be losing with the scrapping, terminating of the low-end business. Obviously, much more relevant is what it does to the EBIT and the cash component. But therefore, the impact is limited. What we indicated is that you're looking probably around about, in the first half of the year, high 40% for services and the balance by contracting, which is, and at the end of the day, what we have said in the ultimate case, we would like to be very much more contracting-focused than services-focused in offshore. We will, however, always have services because you can never have all of your assets being utilized on contracting, on projects. Therefore, there will always be a services component. We have not got an internal target that we say, it has to be X percent. But I think important, the revenue component of what we are getting rid of is limited.
That's great. Thanks.
Thank you. Your next question come from the line of Nirav Maldi. Please ask your question.
Hey, good afternoon. It's Nirav from New York Life, echoing Toby's thanks to all of you for the call. Also, just asking around offshore energy. Obviously, you're taking some capacity out. Just wondering what visibility you have across the market in terms of competitors either having done the same or being expected to follow suit.
Yeah, good. Thanks for that question. I'll field that one as well. A little bit of background. When we have obviously seen, and if you read the narrative which is given over the last year and a half, 2 years, is we have this has not been a surprise to see the pressures at the low end, and we have also in the background have had discussions with our competitors in heavy marine transport over the last 18 months. To see if there was a way in which we could improve, let's say, the discipline and seek forms of consolidation. If you were to look back at our strategy update, which we communicated last year, we also mentioned that we were keen to look at forms of consolidation in heavy marine transport. And we had discussions with the Chinese, the Koreans, the Norwegians, to see if there was a way in which we could form joint ventures at the low end, pool capacity, get to agreements to curb the inflow of new capacity, maybe even rationalize capacity at the low end, with the ultimate objective of improving pricing and discipline. The low end is very different to the high end, and that's why we were focusing very much on resolving and improving low-end economics. When we got to the point that we said, we do not see there's a form of a JV which is acceptable to us, compounded by the realization that, it wasn't only negative EBIT, but it was cash negative. Again, compounded by the vintage of the vessel, the amount of capacity which has been added in the market, all of that added up says, this now becomes a no-brainer. It's time to step out. That's the decision which we've now taken. And with that, we also realize that at the low end, you could argue that economics have improved because we're going to eliminate capacity. On the other hand, with 30-year-plus old vessels, the likelihood of, let's say, getting proceeds beyond scrap are limited. We're not going to be selling these or offering these to competitors. We do not want to, give them additional capacity. Low end is something where we say, that's where we cannot distinguish. It's a price market. It's a price taker market. High end, on the other hand, that is where we do believe that we can be distinctive. And that's where we're obviously going to be focusing on. High end, what you have to think of is the transportation of FPSOs, of spar buoys, where having not only the unique vessels to transport them, it's also about the installation capabilities you need once you deliver something. So in short, low end, the visibility which we have is economic weren't great, and that was ultimately what led to the decision to step out of low end. What that does for dynamics of the low end, we're not really too concerned because it is a very much a commoditized market. High end, it's a different game. 2019 is still going to be a transition year, I think. 2020 and later is where we see tendering environment, also again for transportation and installation of structures. Just looking at Hans, if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think that's a fair comment. And I think going back to the time of the acquisition of Dockwise, we did that acquisition at that time with the eye on the involvement and on building our offshore energy division, which means oil and gas related. And most of that, and that's what we looked at the time, it's these vessels, the upper half of the fleet of Dockwise, the lower half, as Martijn mentioned, were all the vessels at the time already we made considerations, because most of the work for these vessels is what we call the port and marine type of cargo, so far less oil and gas related, which is a business that over time has grown with let's say worldwide economic growth. So there is some growth, and I think there is some growth in demand will be there in the future. But the capacity in that business has increased much faster than that. And we've always said with these vessels, and we're coming from a period where everything was working on full throttle, that new capacity wasn't there yet, that these vessels generated EBIT and generated cash. As long as these vessels generate cash, we will continue to employ them. But there will be a time when that may come to an end, and that time is there. So now the fleet is to a much larger extent fully oil and gas related, higher end of the market. And as Martijn said, I think we certainly see some increased tender activities there. I think if you look at the number of projects generally in oil and gas that will generate work for these vessels, numbers of FIDs are going up compared with the very low levels of the last few years. And as said before, since these are late cyclical activities, we will respond to that with some delay. So we certainly think, based on the way we look at and what we hear from other parties in the market, that we see some signs of that market coming out of the trough, and should result in increased activities in this part as of 2020-2021, and we are very comfortable with that. That part of the business.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Okay. Well, if will anyone who wants to press, I guess this is your moment. Otherwise, operator, if there are no further questions. We would like to thank everyone again for your participation, your involvement. We always enjoy and appreciate the feedback we get from you guys.
Excuse me. Sorry, we have another request for question. Come from the line of Tom Gleason. Please ask your question.
Thank you very much. Martin, you had mentioned that you're seeing an increase in the number of FIDs that are out there. Is there any particular regions of the world that you're seeing this, or any particular type of project that you're seeing the FIDs in?
It's a mixture. If we look at, I think on the nearest ones which we're seeing is, I think it's fair to say, is West Coast of Canada. We are already involved pre-FID on the dredging side of Canada LNG. That's the Shell development on the West Coast. The good thing is that, there we have the involvement on dredging, and post-FID, they will also have to look at the shipping in of modules which are going to be constructed in Asia for that LNG plant. Closely tracking Canada LNG is the Kitimat development, also on the western coast. Feedback we get is that, they are deliberately trailing the Shell development by give or take 12 months. So Canada is an area where we see it. We see Brazil has its challenges, has always had its challenges, but there, we do see movements happening there on deep water. A very important area, however, has historically always been the case and will continue to be so, is the Middle East.
Yep.
That is traditionally where we have always seen with shallow water developments with NOCs who have, different cost structures to the IOCs. We are currently involved in a tender process for Saudi Aramco, where Saudi Aramco has always had what's called an LTA agreement, a long-term agreement, where they have a number of pre-selected contractors who do work for them. Always, use the analogy, they've got the cake, and a number of predetermined participants who can have a slice of the cake. Well, the cake has grown in size. They want to increase the number of participants to avoid the slices of cake getting too big. They're therefore going through the process of selecting additional LTA partners. We have always been very clear, Tom, that whilst we have the ambition to move up in the value chain and to become more of a contractor as opposed to services, that we do not, exclamation mark, want to become an EPCI contractor. So whilst Saudi Aramco has said, we look for participants who can construct, overhaul structures, and do transportation installation, seabed preparation, etc., we standalone would not be a logical participant in the LTA. However, we have teamed up with a local player who does have fabrication capabilities, does not have installation capabilities, actually encouraged to do so by Saudi Aramco, and are currently, and we feel that we've already accomplished a lot by having gone through all the processes and having reached the point where we are now at the last four, having been recognized as a full-fledged EPCI player, but in the combination of a partnership with a yard. I think it's still too early to count our chicks before they hatch, but if we look at the recognition which we've got, these are the types of structures which we like, where you can be involved on the T&I. And if we were to be successful, that would, of course, be a huge reinforcement of the strategy which we have been pursuing.
All right. Thank you. And let me reiterate what everybody else has said. We do really appreciate these calls and just getting a little bit of enlightenment on the background of how things operate. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Cecil Mitchell. Please ask your question.
Cecile, are you there, or has the line been opened? The operator?
Yeah, I was on mute, sorry. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yes, we can.
Yes, I have a couple of questions. The first one will be, what's dragging the increase in gross debt for this year? Because when I compare to the previous year, it has been relatively flat versus the first, fiscal year. And so what's driving that? Second question is regarding the margins. So we see that your market is, you know, under pricing pressure in dredging in the offshore oil and gas. Do you see this decline as structural, or do you expect it to recover at some point? And where do you see the more normalized, you know, EBIT margin or EBITDA margin going forward? That would be useful. And my last question would be, I'm not sure I fully understand what's the difference between the low-end market of transportation service and the high-end. So if you can give me just one or two examples of what is a typical low-end service that you provide versus high-end would be useful. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, to start off with that last question, the low end is really the part of the market, let's say, where it is relatively straightforward transportation. So it's basically its capacity doesn't require a lot of additional competencies to that. As I mentioned before, large part of the activity there is more port and marine type of transportation. So it is just large cargo for these type of vessels. Some of that is oil and gas related, but most of that is not oil and gas gas related. The higher you go on the scale, the more of that is related to oil and gas, which means that you have to have not only the vessel, but you also have to have the engineering capacity to construct loading plants for the vessels, even to technically prepare vessels in order to transport structures. Think of topsides for platforms. As you may imagine, you can't just take a complicated platform and put it on a vessel. You really have to prepare the vessel to be able to transport a specific structure. Or the vessel, like we have just been doing with the Vanguard, transport the FPSO, a floating production and storage unit from the Far East to Brazil. These are large vessels, so they can only be transported by very large transportation vessels. You have to be able to. As I said, engineering the loading of those vessels. That, in very rough term, is, let's say, on the gliding scale, the difference between low end, straightforward, not very complicated transportation activities, versus transportation activities that do require engineering input and other competencies.
Maybe just a small addition to that, Hans. Cecile, the low-end vessels, many of them, in our cases, were converted tankers.
Yep.
So not purpose-built heavy marine transport vessels. And all of them have what we call closed sterns. So they have a section at the front and a section at the back, the stern and the bow, which is closed off. And the loading, therefore, has to be done from the side. That also has operational limitations. The chunk of the fleet which we have left now is open stern or even open stern, open bow. So you can load from the front, from the back, from the side, from left, from starboard, from port. And that creates a lot more flexibility as well. So there are also different vessel types, which also allows you to transport different structures like Hans mentioned.
Yeah.
Okay, thank
so
you.
That was one question.
Yeah,
then I'll let me do quickly margins then, Cecile.
Yeah.
First of all, if we look at dredging, to start with dredging, we've had historically, we have guided markets, and we've never given, let's say, execution margin guidance, but we have said, you know, what we know is margins going into the backlog historically have been in the order of magnitude of 10 to 12% EBIT. Earlier this year, as a consequence of the fact that we see less oil and gas work in the world, and that also impacts dredging. Within dredging, some people forget that in the past, 25% of our revenues and therefore utilization in dredging were oil and gas related. That we see that there's a shortfall in the current market on demand on dredging, and that's has led us to see in the market and have guided to the market that we see orders going into the backlog at dredging more in the bandwidth of 8 to 10. That is a stable picture as we sit here today. Obviously, execution, project execution, whether you do things well, whether soil circumstances are as expected, whether you get variation orders, the whole spectrum which we come across on projects will cause margins, delivered margins, old settlements will cause margins to deviate from that 8 to 10 bandwidth. What is important is that we do not believe that the 8 to 10 is a sliding scale downwards. We see it currently being stable. And moreover, if we see a mega project like Suez, what it was, or like the Dubai developments prior, coming back into the market, and if we see oil and gas coming back in a meaningful way, supply and demand will evolve to a point that we see margin potential going back up to that historic 10 to 12 area. So in terms of margins erosion, which we've seen on the dredging side, it's a reflection of also the lacking of the mega project, lacking oil and gas, something which we do not believe is structural. Having said that, predicting mega projects has never been possible, and in today's world, we are also not going to try to second guess where the next mega project might come from. But we do believe that there is upward potential with time on the dredging side. Offshore, it's a much more difficult view to take because there we are truly looking at a basket of activities, services. In the current environment, of course, services with negative EBIT margins on the transport, low-end transport, the subsea services business where we have ramp-up things with the two vessels which we acquired late last year. On the other hand, the survey activities which we recently acquired is early cyclical. There we are seeing nice improvement and positive EBIT margins in the current early cyclical environment where survey acts in. Obviously, on the other side, on the contracting side, we are taking on risk, project execution risk, where you want to be reimbursed for that. And that's why we've always said, you're not going to do projects for just cash purposes. You want to have EBIT margins there. And again, it really does depend on, do you have procurement within the scope? But you're looking at high single digits, low double digits on a reasonable contracting project. And then again, it also depends on execution. But there, it's the shift. We're getting rid of some of the loss-making EBIT business, of course, now. We've got ramping up on subsea services. And as we gravitate more into contracting, again, I think, and we want to be very, very cautious there. We are also with the equity guys, extremely cautious not to raise high expectations. But there, again, there is upward potential from where we are today, particularly if we look beyond 19 into 2020, 2021, where we see a positive tendering environment.
Yes, and then maybe your first question, if I remember well, was on the increase in gross debt. That increase is a reflection of what I just mentioned, the cash outflow in working capital. These are all drawings under our syndicated banking facility, short term drawings. No long term fixed debt increased, just drawings in order to finance working capital.
Okay, so it means that in the past you had enough cash reserves to finance that with cash on balance sheet, and now you're because you're
That's
cash
correct.
Reserves have decreased. You're using your RCF.
Yep, that's correct. That's correct. I mean, we're coming from a period, as you may remember, just a year or so ago, we had a substantial amount of cash on the balance sheet. Part of that was used to early to prepay the 2010 series of US PPE, which I think we did at the beginning of 2017.
Yes.
And we did, as I mentioned, we did a share buyback last year. All of that was done from cash reserves. We have now come down with our cash reserves to kind of amount that typically it's more or less almost a fixed amount on our balance sheet. That's cash within joint ventures. That is cash that we have in various places in the world, and temporary working capital requirements we do finance through the revolving credit facility.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Okay, well, again, if there is anyone who has a question, this is your moment to hit that button. Otherwise, as always, we are available just the other end of an email or a phone call if you want to follow up on anything which we've discussed. And again, we'd like to thank you all for participating on behalf of the team here. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may all disconnect.